You've stopped in at the Guidepost, brought to you by the American Saltwater Guides Association. Stock up on gear, grab a coffee at the counter, and get ready to hear incredible fish stories from the best captains on the East Coast and thought-provoking conversations with stakeholders and policymakers working to protect these fisheries. This podcast is presented by Costa Sunglasses.
Hey, y'all. As always, thank you for listening to the Guidepost podcast. I think you're really going to enjoy this episode. A little note before we kick it off. We actually delayed the launch of this podcast because the public comment deadline has been extended to August 22nd. So we hope you enjoy the episode. We hope you find some inspiration. And just know you got a couple more weeks to participate. Again, that's 8:22 for the deadline. And without further ado, enjoy this new episode.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Guidepost. Tony here. So, you know, if y'all haven't noticed, we've kind of been stepping out of our, you know, fish only zone and starting to talk about some other stuff. We got a lot of positive feedback on the changes to the roadless rule the other day. And then, you know, I think some of our best podcasts just come from just sheer luck, coincidence. Like I always say, good Lord loves me. I don't know why, but there's no other reason for me to be here doing what I'm doing. Y'all have listened to the podcast about Menhaden, and someone I've known for a real long time from the DC community, and I have a lot of respect for, just a all around smart person whose heart is in the right place and cares about a lot of stuff, just sent me an email and said, "Hey man, I enjoyed your podcast." And I was like, "Holy smokes, I hadn't heard from you and whatever. What are you working on?" And damn if they didn't say Virginia deep sea mining. And I was like, well, that's crazy, because I just saw that stuff and I'm kind of freaking out over it. And then I said, wait a minute, why don't you come on the podcast? And here we are. And I'd like to introduce Miriam Goldstein and Andrew Thaler, and they're going to be our guests, and they're going to teach us an awful lot about what is happening and what could happen off what I consider to be one of the most special places on the East Coast, the entire Virginia Eastern Shore, which the first day I went there, I fell in love with it. And this is some pretty scary stuff. So Miriam, Andrew, introduce yourselves and we're just going to dive right in.
Well, hey, Tony, thanks so much for having us. Although I wish it was on a better topic than this, but very happy to be here talking about it. My name is Miriam Goldstein. Currently, I'm the executive director of the National Ocean Protection Coalition. We organize 95 nonprofit groups around different ocean protection issues. And up until a year ago, we did not work on deep sea mining or seabed mining, but since this kicked off last April, we now work on deep sea mining. So I've been in, as Tony said, I've been in DC world for about 13 years now, in different roles, in working in Congress, working in the White House, and working in other nonprofits. And my background is in ocean science. So I'll kick it over to Andrew.
All right. Well, hello, and thank you for having us tonight. I also wish it were on better terms, but I am a deep sea ecologist. I have for almost 20 years now been studying the environmental impacts of deep sea mining around the world. And this is the first time it's really come home, because I am also on the Eastern Shore. And so this is a little shallower than I usually work. I usually work in the big deep sea, 4,000 meters, but this is right in my backyard, the first major seabed mining proposal to happen on the U.S. Eastern Shore in about 50 years.
So, you know, this is one of those things, and this is actually why Miriam reached out to me after she was kind of reading some of our stuff and listened to the podcast. Like, we live in a world of nuance where everyone else tries to make things black and white. And the benefit of, you know, instead of just pointing at something and saying bad, the benefit of being nuanced is you take in a lot of information and then you're kind of informed to make a decision. because I can't tell you, like, just in my world, in the fisheries world, the stuff that I run across on social media, 90% of it is, well, I mean, look, it's curated AI right now, but like 90% of it isn't correct. And I feel like I'm the only one who knows it, and I'm reading it and I'm like, you're wrong. So we're with this issue, we are going to step into the world of nuance so we can teach these people and they can make the best decision, what they think is the best decision, because we want people to comment on this issue. So I'm just going to set the stage, and then we can talk about, you know, habitat impacts. Well, actually, first thing I think we should probably just talk about is the scope of what this is. But I'm going to kick it off by saying this. You know, this is a push by the current administration to address issues that they feel are important and have identified, with things like rare earth minerals, rare earth elements, everything from titanium to phosphates to just the sand, right? You need the sand for replenishment projects. So, you know, they're trying to be able to get this stuff domestically. And we have a very long, laborious process for this. But maybe I'm biased, but this is the wrong location. The impacts, we can't even begin to understand the magnitude of what they're proposing. And while I applaud the efforts to make, you know, us more resilient as a country, I do not, this is a bad idea. So, well, let me just kind of paint, because y'all know way more than me and you're going to go down a rabbit hole, but what, and correct me if I misspeak here, because it's very important that I'm accurate. Federal waters start at 3 miles. The EEZ, yes. Federal waters go out to 200 miles. They are looking at this project for 3 miles to, I think, 65 miles mm-hmm. out into the ocean. So in other words, Virginia doesn't have a say in this because it's federal waters. They're being very careful about that. And they are going to dredge. Okay, Andrew, if I hit.
Yeah, so I would say Virginia does have a say in it. They don't have the final say.
Correct. Yes.
So the people of Virginia and the government thing, of Virginia. Andrew. Yeah. Okay.
That's like, you know, if somebody says you don't have a say in it, it means, well, my mom said that. That means I could complain all I want, but I was going to do whatever she said in the end. So that's cool. So the federal waters, and this is a dredge project. So, you know, different people listening to this may think of like a scallop dredge. Or a crab dredge. Think of more a hydraulic dredge like that they would use for clams. So they're not scraping the bottom. They're sucking it up through a big tube. Okay. So 3 to 65 miles out, sucking the bottom up to look for, you know, the things that they can sell and they're going to be looking for. And the whole area is bigger than Delaware that they're looking to do this in. And it's like over 100 million acres, and it's like 20 to over 2,000 square miles. So this is not a small impact project. Mm-mm. So that's the basis that, you know, I'm trying to frame this. Let's get in to where we are in the process, number one, so people have a timeline if they want to get involved, and then what are some of the major concerns? So Andrew or Miriam, take it away. You know, where are we right now with this ill-conceived plan?
Well, the good news is that we are at the very beginning. So to start off, there's a company called Odyssey Marine Exploration, which Andrew knows a lot about and we'll talk about a little bit more after I stop talking. But they said, well, we want to do this heavy mineral dredging in this area and requested that they be able to do that from BOEM. This was back in the fall, but for some reason they announced that they were going to give them that permission back then. But for some reason, the process didn't kick off until just about a month ago. So we're in the first stage, which is called a request for information. And that is when BOEM puts a map of the area that Tony was just talking about and says, hey, this is what we want to do. Everyone just put in comments about whether this is the area, if you think we should or we shouldn't, what should we consider? The current deadline to put in comments through the federal website is Thursday, 2 days from now. But we think it likely that there's another 30-day extension. It's not guaranteed, but we think it likely because in other parts of the country where this process has happened, they have been granted that extension. So we're hopeful that there'll be a little bit more time. So if folks listening to this do want to comment, that it hopefully won't be Thursday, but we'll keep Tony in the loop so he can tell you all. That's where we are in the process. I want to kick it to Andrew to say a little bit more about this company and what they actually do.
Sure. So Odyssey Marine is a marine exploration company. They do a variety of things. They got a little infamous several years ago from salvaging a Spanish galleon, which got them in a little bit of legal trouble with Spain. That lawsuit went on for several years, and eventually it was determined that Spain owned the cultural heritage from that galleon, and the gold had to go back to Spain. They also operate a couple of mining prospects around the world, and they have for many years been banging the drum of both deep sea mining and shallower water seabed mining for things like marine phosphorites. So what they're looking for off the coast of Virginia is heavy mineral sands. So these are sand deposits, basically erosion from the Blue Ridge Mountains that has washed all the way out to sea and is rich in things like titanium. It may be rich in things like rare earth metals. An important caveat is that the proposed area has not been prospected. So we don't actually know the value of the mineral deposits out there, whether or not it'll be commercially viable, whether or not it'll be reasonable to extract, because those baseline studies have not been done yet. And it seems like they picked this particular area because they suspect there's some mineral-rich sands there and because it may be politically convenient just because of the particular location. It's north of where a lot of the sand dredging was conducted for Hurricane Sandy beach renourishment. So there has been sand dredging in the general area in the past, though not in this specific area. They're also looking for a weird thing called a marine phosphorite. And marine phosphorites are basically accretions of phosphorus that form on the seafloor. They can occur in crusts. They can occur just as free-floating sand grains. And they can occur in nodules. But they're rich in phosphorus. We need phosphorus for agriculture. There's lots of different ways to get phosphorus. I don't think it's particularly economically or commercially productive to get it from the bottom of the seafloor. And I think what's important to note is that this deposit isn't just in the ocean. So Virginia has had an active sand mining program for heavy metal sand on land, in the old Hickory deposit in, out near Dinwiddie. And so they've been mining this deposit for a while. Those mines went out of business because they just couldn't turn a profit after about 20 years. So, the value of the mineral deposit is very much still in question. But, you know, as you said, the way they're getting at it is not, it's not quite like dredging, but it's a little bit like a combination between, vacuuming and dredging. So they're using a system. We don't know exactly what the proposed system is yet because they don't know exactly what the proposed system is yet. But in, their application, they talked about using something called a trailing suction hopper dredger, which is almost certainly what they're going to end up using. And what that is you've got your giant vacuum tube. Like, have you ever seen those really cool videos of like underwater archaeology where the divers have those huge vacuum tubes and they're sucking up sand to get to the artifacts? It's basically a supercharged version of that, but it's got a spade on it. It's got a big bit. And so as the barge is traveling over the seafloor, it's dragging this bit through the sand and it's breaking up the seafloor because the heavy mineral sands are not just right at the surface. They're down a couple of feet beneath the seafloor. And so they're dragging this big spade bit over the seafloor and at the same time sucking up all the sand that's being disturbed. That sand is then being pumped up to the barge, whether they process the sand on the barge and then dump the wastewater over the side or land all the sand on shore and process it in an onshore facility. We don't know yet. But the basic structure is scooping up as much of the seafloor as you can, filtering out the heavy metals from the sand. The sand itself is not particularly good for beach renourishment projects because it was full of heavy metals. And like, I don't particularly want to go bathing on a beach loaded with arsenic. I think most people would be opposed to that. If it turns out it's enriched in arsenic, which it very well
might be.
Depends
how much you like your family or not.
I mean, I've seen the well water tests on the Maryland Eastern Shore. I'm pretty sure there's going to be arsenic mixed in with these heavy metals.
So, you know, I just, when I first read this, first of all, I appreciate everything that y'all said. When I first read this, the first thing that came to mind, because it's what I see a lot of or used to see a lot of, and this is a look, you know, I try to do, you know, analogies of what I know that our listeners, you know, the scale that they can understand it on. So when Governor Hogan got elected, mysteriously hydraulic dredging for clams wasn't a bad thing anymore, even though they had banned it in Delaware Bay because you could see the scarring from space. So, you know, woke up one morning, ran the boat, saw three work boats off Tillman Point in Eastern Bay, and was like, oh. And I watched them work it for years. And every time I went by, the water was coffee with some cream in it. That was one of the most productive areas. I never would have said that point of land up until maybe 4 or 5 years ago when they destroyed it, because it had a clam clutch in there. It went out to, you know, 9 foot deep and just a ledge. And when you were on the sonar, you could see the clams on the sonar. It was just a incredibly beautiful clam bed, and it was the one spot that we would go to like during the week in the morning when like people weren't watching us, and you could just blind cast and you could catch a 26 inch speckled trout, a big redfish, a decent sized redfish, catch a 6-7 pound bluefish, which is not common in Eastern Bay. You catch a giant Spanish mackerel. You didn't know what you were going to catch, and it would just be a place where we would stop and fish for 30 minutes because you never knew. You never knew what was there, but there was life, and there ain't nothing there now. So, you know, a hydraulic dredge has kind of got like a conveyor belt, looks like an escalator kind of, and they lower it down, and it's just like a power washer. You know, they got a big pump sucking water in. The pump gets smaller, smaller, smaller until it's, and then it blasts. All those little nozzles are on the end of that little conveyor belt. It blasts the bottom. It liquefies like the first 12 inches, and it kicks the clams up on the conveyor belt, and then, you know, the guys just stand at the top of the conveyor belt and sort the clams. Well, it could take 50 years for that clam clutch to come back.
Yeah.
And it's gone. Gone. And these are bait clams, and you're like, what are you doing this for? Like, this is so bad. Like, every little thing that lives on the bottom doesn't live there anymore. It's squished. It's gone. You know, every little shrimp, every little worm, and oh, who cares about that stuff? Well, I do, because it's the benthic fauna that's the whole basis of the ecosystem. So, like, when I just hear what y'all are saying, so let me get this straight. We don't know if there's anything valuable. They haven't even done any test mining. One company submits an RFI, and next thing you know, everyone in our community has to rally. to learn about this and then send comments in, because they want to industrialize the ocean at the mouth of the Chesapeake Bay in an area that's the size of Delaware. Did I cover everything?
Yeah. that was very
good.
Thorough.
Good synopsis.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, you got it.
I didn't have that on my bingo card, Miriam, when I woke up in June and I saw it and was like, you know, it's just some days it's not worth chewing through the restraints. You know what I mean? You just, some days you should just be like, you know, these cuffs aren't that bad. I'm just going to stay in bed for a while.
I sometimes just want to lie face down on the floor. So
Okay. Same thing. Probably be better for my back if I did that. You know, I'm getting up there. So, this is wild, right? So I feel like there's a very dark time coming, no matter what administration's in play, because I think that we're starting to view the ocean as some type of place that we need to industrialize, which really freaks me out. I don't know. Like, is this just the beginning of a new trend? Can we beat this back and we don't hear about it for another 50 years? Like,
so this is kind of it is not a new trend. This is something that, different companies have been trying to kick off for, almost 50 years now when it comes to marine phosphorites. Actually, the very first time that the agency that eventually became BOEM tried to do one of these offshore mining projects was, I think, in 1961. They issued a series of permits off the coast of California for phosphorite mining. They eventually had to pull those permits because the company discovered unexploded ordnance of an undisclosed nature. So they found
it was not me. don't do that to me. I never been to California in the 60s.
I mean, if you were accidentally dropping atomic missiles in the bottom of the ocean in 1961,
Andrew,
you're doing well for yourself.
I'm on enough watch lists as it is right now. Please. There are certain people who would love to implicate me in just about anything, but I promise you this is the left coast and everyone knows I don't go there. So, okay.
So it's, right. The industry, they've been trying to kick it off for a while. And actually Odyssey tried to start a phosphorite mine in Mexico in 2012 through today. And it had been tied up in Mexican courts for years and years and years over environmental concerns. They finally got permission to start mining, I believe in 2024. It may have been 2022, but, they were never able to raise enough capital to actually get it off the ground. And as far as I know, that operation is currently stalled. There's been a few attempts around the world, that are significantly more mature than this attempt that still have not been able to, after two decades of work, actually get to production. So,
well, if there's one thing that could ever galvanize all sectors of the fishing community, this may be it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when you think about it, you're like, you know, you get people to disagree on stuff. No, you should do this with this area. But when you're like, anyone running to the canyons out of Oyster or mm-hmm. Chincoteague or Cape Charles, depending
on right
where that
the coast
warm
of
water eddy is, where you're heading to those tuna grounds
mm-hmm.
or billfish, you're gonna come across a mess.
Yeah, you're going right
on
through
a biblical
it.
Scale. And like I'm thinking about things like the White Marlin Open
mm-hmm.
in oceans. Like, how are you gonna? I mean, just like let me rattle off a couple things. I don't know, right whale migration.
Yep, right through there.
Striper migration. The migration of everything from north to south and south mm-hmm. to north on the Atlantic coast. The fact that we're the largest estuary in the country.
Atlantic sturgeon.
That, the man, you just hit me with a trigger, Andrew. Don't
no.
even.
Oh, no. Like, oh, no.
Oh, no. Like, no, it's fine. Let's just carpet the Chesapeake Bay and gill nets. And then, yeah, right when those sturgeon are spawning, it's a good idea. So you have so much. I mean, it's kind of wild. And like on a very basic level, just about everything that lives on the bottom, besides crustaceans, doesn't really have any protection because it doesn't have to have it. All the invertebrates that are the cornerstone of everything nothing will survive.
Yeah.
I mean, nothing.
I've been spending my life trying to get people to care about worms.
But well, you know, and Andrew and I
you,
were
you
talking.
You just made a friend, Andrew. Except those damn Mayworms. I can't catch a striper for a week, for a goddamn week, because they're throwing them. They're throwing up 5 gallons of Mayworms on my boat, and like, and you have to hit them right between the eyes with the fly, or they won't even like my. Look, this is regional stuff, but like, you want to find people that care about worms, go to Rhode Island and Cape Cod, because yes, they can actually catch stripers on the worm hatch. Or my tarpon guys in the Keys, with their major worm hatches that they can catch giant tarpon on. I despise the worm hatch. I just want to go out there. It is, they do not function the same way in the Chesapeake, and you can't catch a damn thing for. Basically, I circle the first full moon in May and I'm like, F you on the calendar, and draw an arrow out 4 days in either direction. And I'm like, paint house for wife. That's when I do all my painting, Miriam. Telling you, man. So, Miriam, what's going on? It looks like I just talked over you. You want to say something?
No, I wanted to learn about the worm patches.
The worm hatch. I don't. They're the most annoying. God. And you're like, hey, I got one. And it's like, bleh, on your boat. And it's just a bucket of half digested worms. But like nothing. Maybe they could do some minor deep, since they already wrecked Tillman Point. Maybe we can get those guys to come in and just take out the Mayworms. Tell them there's, I don't know, whatever, magnesium on the bottom or that. I don't friggin' know. Whatever they want. Just wipe out these damn worms so I can catch a fish in May. So sorry, Miriam.
No,
I
just
really don't
say,
like Mayworms.
No Mayworms. So, okay. So we think this is bad, except for maybe the Mayworms. We got
yes,
it.
Yes. Yeah. I'm going to put that in my comment.
Put that in your comment. But no, but when Andrew and I were on another call, and he's like, oh yeah, you know, he's talking about the equipment. He's like, oh, I think it's like the first 6 foot of the bottom they're going to take out. I said, 6 foot? Because that's everything, really. Like, that's the whole.
Yeah, there's nothing. I mean, there's primordial ooze and God knows what. That's where
everything
lives.
I mean, that's
all
the life. And then, but the other problem is the plume. So when they you know, take it off the bottom, as Andrew is saying, suck it up in the dredge, take out the metals that they want. And we think, but we're not really clear, as Andrew is saying, they probably put the waste back in, but then that's suspended. So that's like the coffee with a little milk. So that knocks out the rest of the plankton. Because when you know,
and that's a metal rich plume. That's not just a mud plume. That's not just a sand plume. That's whatever metals are suspended in the sand is going to be in the water column.
So that's like the Menhaden food, basically. So all those, the stuff that all those bait fish are coming for, like, it also could impact all that swimming plankton.
Well, lucky for us, there aren't very many Menhaden left, Miriam.
I shouldn't have said Menhaden. Another trigger word. I should have said
herring.
We're
doing a podcast about that in a couple of days. Like, you know, hey, actually, on the upside, you're getting me on this guy's side, because that might kill some jellyfish. I don't like jellyfish and Mayworms. Same thing, man. Like, you know what I mean? It's like a, it's like a tick. Like, what in the world is a tick good for? You know, seriously, I hate them things. Like, if a tick bites me and I can't eat meat, the ticks will write songs about me on how many of them things I will kill just out of spite. So, you know, jellyfish, I can't, I just, Watch, I'm going to get hate mail from a jellyfish scientist. But maybe there is some good that can come out of this. We can wipe out the last of the Mayworms in Eastern Bay, kill a bunch of jellyfish because there's no Menhaden left. Man, you guys are, this is going in the wrong direction. Y'all are selling me on sucking up the first 6 feet.
We're going to we're gonna have to send some jellyfish scientists to you.
We'll
get you to have Rebecca Helm on.
Hey, so listen, really... Andrew, as long as it's not the bird ladies, I've been to the mountain, brother. Like, when those bird ladies come at you, your only thing you can do is run. So, yeah.
No, so you've really found the silver lining to just killing everything. You're like, you might kill everything, but also kill those things.
Yeah. Yeah, at least I get those damn sea nettles out of my out of my life. Okay. You know, it just, I look at this stuff and I wonder, I deeply wonder where our politicians get information from. Because it's not the right people. I'm not as jaded as everybody else. I just think that there's hope in all of this. And I know, because that's what we fight for every day. Y'all do it in a different capacity, and so do I. And like the day that I wake up, I was like, there's no hope. I don't know. Maybe I'll go sell ice cream cones or something, then people might like me. But, you know, some ideas are just so bad. Like, show me anywhere in the world where someone has vacuumed up 6 foot of the seafloor and then dumped it back in and good came out of it. I mean, just, I don't think this is one of those things that needs a lot of convincing, right? Like, it's just, none of it makes sense. There has to be better places to do this where we can control the damage a lot more easily than you can do in the open ocean. Like, how do you control that? You can't. It's not possible.
Well, and right? The reality is they had a spot on land where they were going for the exact same minerals, the exact same geologic deposit. You know, my argument is always like, if you can't do it on land, you can't do it on the ocean. If it's not, anything you do in the ocean is 10 times more expensive and more destructive than what you're going to do on land. And if it doesn't work on land, it's not going to work on the ocean. And they tried and it didn't work. The terrestrial mines for heavy metal sands just could not turn a profit. And so, you know, why go to sea if you've already kind of disproven your own thesis?
Is this Odyssey Corporation? Are these just people who are just going to throw anything they can against a wall and see what sticks?
They are a marine exploration company. They have their hands in a lot of different pots. They're trying lots of different things. And, you know, and some of the stuff's really interesting. You know, I think salvaging shipwrecks that aren't, you know, that you have legitimate cultural claims to and aren't going to get sued by the government of Spain. You know, there's valuable ore in shipwrecks, especially when you start looking at things like pre-nuclear steel and ancient lead that what used to be used as ballast that we need for like really sophisticated medical equipment and really sophisticated like physics sensors. They do things like they go prospecting in different regions of the world. I think they have an operation out of the Cook Islands. They have an operation out of Papua New Guinea. None of them are at commercial scale yet. They're all still in the exploration phase. But they are, I mean, they are a venture company in the original meaning of the word venture, which is get a bunch of guys together, get some investors, and go to sea and see what you can find in the new world.
I will say one thing that we're seeing, because this is not the only proposal for seabed mining. Okay. So there's proposals right now in American Samoa, the Mariana Islands, Alaska, Virginia, which we're talking about, and then in international waters. But on the ones in the American Samoa, Mariana Islands, and Alaska, we are seeing the same opposition, and it's not a political position. We're seeing... you know, concern from many sectors, of course, from the fishing industry and tourism industry and environmentalists and the usual suspects, but just a lot of concern from regular people from those areas, as well as from their elected officials about what this will do. Because, you know, people, of course, they want economic development. I mean, you know, it's very understandable. But what came through in those other places is while people do want that, they don't want it at the cost of a healthy ocean. So they don't want it, you know, they don't want to sacrifice all their fisheries towards this right now very nebulous industry. So, yeah.
And there are ways to do these things that are better. There are ways to do these kinds of minings that are worse. You know, in the last 20 years, I've worked with mining companies. I've worked against mining companies. You know, anyone interested in developing like the best possible practices to make the industry as responsible as possible, if it can be done responsibly, I'm happy to work with. And, you know, I look at the area off the coast of Virginia. I look at how much life is out there, at how much cultural value is out there, how many different peoples use those areas in different ways. It's recreational, it's commercial, it's, you know, people are bird watching, people are surfing. You know, it's industrial too. We use a good chunk of the area around Norfolk for beach renourishment projects. And beach renourishment projects, you know, those are short-term dredging operations.
Well, Andrew, we're talking right across about, the bay, you got one of the biggest naval bases.
Absolutely.
I mean, you have submarines, you have nuclear submarines, yeah. you have everything going through the mouth of the bay. I mean, nobody's saying, you know, oh, leave only footprints. I mean, we've done it. We've been to the mountain there, you know, I mean that, but you know, look, this place, like maybe some people don't know this, but you know, that area of Virginia is probably the northern extent of the Atlantic tarpon migration.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay. Like, that's a pretty important fish, worth billions of dollars to the Florida economy. It's also the northern range of real big redfish, northern range of speckled trout, northern range of like shrimp, like table shrimp, not like grass shrimp, like brown shrimp, white shrimp, like same things you get in South mm-hmm. Carolina. And we don't know anything about it. I got a picture last year of, if I say the wrong thing on this, boy, you think the jellyfish ladies are going to give me hate. So I got a picture last year of a juvenile tarpon on the eastern shore ocean side of Virginia that was about 12 inches long that someone caught in a cast net while they were throwing for bait because they were going to go flounder fishing. And then the next year, they sent me two pictures of tarpon that they caught in front of the same drainage pipe with the same cast net right on the ocean side of Virginia down there. 12-inch tarpon can't swim from Florida to here. Something's happening. And like, I don't know. What if we wrecked an unknown tarpon spawning area? What if we disrupted the migration of menhaden and the lobster industry in Maine couldn't harvest their 30 plus million pounds when their quota was just 2 million pounds a few short years ago? And these people obviously want to kill all my menhaden. I digress. But, you know, we're not, how do we know, like, is this operation going to work 24/7, 365? We have a migration that's equivalent to the biomass of the wildebeest migration in Africa that happens twice a year on the Atlantic coast, going up, going down. How is something the size of Delaware, where you're removing 6 feet of the ocean bottom and then redistributing the waste back into the ocean, how does that not disrupt these migrations.
Yeah.
Forget about the obvious habitat annihilation. Well, you know what the answer is? Nobody knows.
We don't know. We
haven't
do
done
know.
Anything,
these are,
but they want to, hey, let us just wreck shit first and then we can find out later. I mean, is that, are y'all getting a feel for that? Or like, what?
So these are long-term leases. Miriam can correct me on it, but I think it's either a 20-year or a 30-year lease if it's eventually issued. So 20 years. So, you know, day-to-day operations, are they running 24/7, 365? We have no idea. But we do know they're going to be there for 2 decades if they get the permission to do it.
We got to make money.
Exactly.
I mean, that's what I don't understand. Like, what? I got a lot of questions, right? That I'm going to write a comment for a request for information. And I think the half the thing is going to be questions.
Yeah.
Like, yep. What? How many vessels are going to be working at the same time? You going to have them all inshore or you going to have all offshore? Every pretty day, I'm going to bet you they're going to be offshore when the wave height and everything allows you to do the work. How are you going to mitigate the conflicts with my fleet?
How noisy will it be is, I think, another important question.
Man, Andrew lives over here. You won't talk about raising Cain, Miriam? Some guy wants to take a huge chunk of the harbor so he can
land
a float plane.
Oh my god.
Oh no.
Dude, I'm like,
Miriam has gotten a major info dump on this grand seaplane controversy out here.
Float planes.
Andrew, my son is doing the tours at the museum down
there
where y'all
are. Yeah.
He volunteers on Saturdays and does like little walking tours of the town. And I got him all wound up about the seaplane. And I think he may or may not be incorporating in some of the walking tours when the docents aren't too close. But like, Miriam, it's like this seaplane can hold like not very many people.
It's 4 people.
So like, you're going to disrupt an entire harbor for like a mile or two so you can land this thing. And there's an airport, there's a little airport not 10 miles from there where you could do a shuttle bus and fly people in from wherever. DC, the airport in Davidsonville on 50, just boop, right over the back, right here. But no, man, this is just reminding me of the seaplane debacle. Because, man, I'm telling you, that town's fixing to load the cannons that, like, they have at the museum. They're going to pull the...
It's
I'm
true.
Telling
you get 10 points if you get one.
Yeah.
Maybe
I'm just telling you, like, I know the people around here. And I bring that up because I also know the people down there in Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just like, I hope y'all aren't planning to, like, come ashore and go to a restaurant. Like, if y'all get this mining lease, because that's a real special breed down there.
Yeah.
This is, I talked to somebody from Louisiana, like tip of the cap to those people. They're as crazy as the people I grew up with. And I've seen some stuff. So like that's, you know, Andrew's talking about cultural things. Let me tell you, I wouldn't go down there and cause a problem on purpose. And
you
I'm
know,
a lot
number-
more like them than them guys on the boat from Florida. I promise you that. Like anybody ever think of that? Like, you know, I'm like, man, have you seen all the goose blinds around here? Like, you go fly a seaplane over somebody's hat. Like, okay. All right. You ever heard a number 2 steel shot? You know what I mean? Like, I don't know if you're going to be doing that, brother. Like, I don't know.
So that's nuts,
right?
The number one, whenever I work with deep sea mining companies about talking about like what you need to do to get the social license, the permission from the places to actually do any of this work. Number one piece of advice is before you can even think about environmental impacts, before you can even think about anything happening offshore, you have to have community buy-in. You have to talk to the people who are out there. You have to, you know, you have to pound the pavement. You have to knock on doors. You have to actually work with the community to figure out like whether or not you will be able to survive.
Community buy-in for the Eastern Shore.
Well, exactly.
Man. kudos to you if you can crack that nut, because like, holy moly, man, like, I'm just happy when I go to the grocery store or 7-Eleven and people aren't yelling at me. Like, community buy-in here, like,
but I mean, you're absolutely right, nurse. Is that if you don't have, you know, if
get
your employees
my,
need to be able
my
to
land.
Yeah. But you need to be
leave
able to like
me
go
the
to the
hell
damn boat
alone.
Ramp.
These are the 10 commandments yeah. of the Eastern Shore, right? Like, you know.
Yeah.
This is part of me is just like, I just want to sit back and watch, because those boats have to come in to fuel up.
Mm-hmm.
Ask a crabber, ask any commercial crabber, what would happen if the crabbing was hot on, if they were running real good on the river south of where your boat was. What would happen if you docked your boat in a different marina on that river and started setting your traps on that river? One river over, people you know in your whole life. They'd pour sugar in your gas tank. They'd cut every hydraulic line you had and do God knows what else just to send a message. It's probably better off yeah. just going away. So part of me is having the same reaction that my grandfather and grandmother had when I had a butter knife walking towards the electrical outlet. My grandmother goes, no, no, no. And my grandfather put his hand on his shoulder and he goes, let him do it. I did it once. Did it once. Same thing with a donkey. I teased a donkey once. Never looked at a butter knife and an electrical outlet the same. Not once. So part of me is just like, hell, let's send support letters. They'll be out of there in 2 months. Like, I don't know if like y'all, I don't know if Miriam knows these people. Me and Andrew do.
I don't know these people, but I am from New Hampshire, which is not terribly different in the don't put your lobster traps in the wrong place department.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. That's accurate. Yeah.
You've had a few lobster wars up there.
Yeah, I wouldn't do that if I were you.
Yeah.
Do you,
well, you know,
the
Maryland Oystermen's Conference that they have every year, they usually open it up with an acknowledgement of how many years it's been since any of them shot each other.
Yeah. So, you know, like Chesapeake Bay Retriever, it's not a retriever. It's not. It's a monstrosity that they bred that could sustain the worst weather imaginable. And it was a guard dog for the oyster boats when they're sinking each other's oyster boats during the oyster wars. It ain't a retriever. It's like part Labrador, part Newfoundland. It's got a whole bunch of stuff in it. I can't. Y'all laugh at this. So one of the other groups that we work with, it's a good group. They were by one of the guys that I work with. You would know him, Miriam. I don't want to embarrass him, so I'm not going to mention his name, but he was passing through. His wife is a teacher, and she had a conference in Cambridge. So I guess last week he was passing through, and I met him for lunch, and his wife pulls me aside, and she goes, I love that podcast. She's like, she teaches environmental courses in high school in New York on Long Island. I think she's on Long Island. I don't think she's in the city. And she goes, I give my students, you know, it's part of their workload to pick something on your podcast that they like and listen to it. And they report back to me on what they heard and what, you know, get them thinking about, you know, environmental and conservation stuff. And she goes, but I have to put a warning under it because you curse so much. So I just know that there's some class, high school class, that has like that, you know, the rap warning with like big black block letters with white background that's like, you know, content, adult content advisory. So I got to stop myself when I'm getting close to saying a bad word now, because now I feel horrible that I know that there's a whole bunch of high school students that think I'm a foul-mouthed cretin. So
kids came back from like third grade and they were like, we know all the words now. And then they start listing them. I was like, nope, I believe you. You don't have to tell me.
You
nope.
got them.
You got
that's
them.
All of them.
Those are the ones.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the funniest thing about being a parent is when they're like three or four and they smash their thumb and they're like, mother effer. And you're like, one me. One me. I picked that up from me. So we've got a couple options here. We can support this and potentially end my sea nettle and mayworm plague, and also just let them start doing it and then let the Eastern Shore people just have at them when they figure out how bad they're messing stuff up. And then the other option is actually participating in a more formal way, which, despite the different voices in my head, I'm going to suggest this way, is to actually go on the Federal Register, the docket number, and comment on this. And since this is an RFI, maybe a good comment doesn't have to be like it came from a big group, you know, Miriam or Andrew comments that y'all write all the time, but it could just be like, you know, I really think this is a bad idea. It's not, it's really not a great business model to be right now with our technology to be doing this in an ocean. This is a sensitive area. We don't even understand the ramifications of removing 6 feet of sea bottom in an area the size of Delaware, in a very, very pristine area, one of the last real pristine areas on the East Coast, and just leave it at that. I mean, a comment is a comment. If you don't support it, speak from your heart. That's what I tell people. You know, speak from your heart, because, you know, just put in this, is it for this one? I didn't look at all the stipulations on the Federal Register, but I'm pretty sure you'd have to put the docket number in the subject line. That's normal. And then just say, I oppose this.
There's just a website form. So we'll send you the link, and maybe you can just put it in the podcast notes. And so people can just click on it.
That is what we will do.
Just a web form. And what I would encourage, it really, you do not need to like do any extra work. You don't need to like, you know, make it all a citation or academic-y. But what is good is to speak to your own experience. So if you fish in this area, to say like, look, I fish in this area and it's a really important area for, you know, redfish or, you know, whatever it is. Or I take my kids out and we go for stripers out in this area, or we go near here. Just any specifics, like that's what is really important. And you don't have to, like any comment is better than no comment. So if you just write, I oppose this, love Miriam, like that is better than no comment. Don't, you shouldn't sign your name Miriam, probably, if your name's not Miriam, though. but just for like slightly more, just from your own experience and your own work, like your own values in this place, like putting that down is really important.
And what Andrew said before, to bring it back to a comment that I really like that he said, you know, look, my wife is a horse person, unfortunately for me. And when we moved here, she was like, wait a minute, Chincoteague, Misty of Chincoteague. And I was like, oh no, she found out. It's my favorite book when I was a little girl. I'm going to get in the car now. We're going, I'm going to go meet Misty. Y'all, we have wild horses, right? People go there to look at them. They are famous. Like, this place is pristine. It has been the same way for a really long time, and that is not an easy thing to do in this world. And the other thing that I would say is, anyone listening to this, you know, you send the comment and you're like, and if we have said anything that's like attractive at all, and you're like, hey, I've never been to the Eastern Shore of Virginia, like, go to Chincoteague. If you have kids, I swear as God is my witness, you can sit on the beach and look at wild horses with foals that have been there for hundreds of years, and then see something crazy, some crazy ass bird, and then see this beautiful beach that has real natural dunes. There's no sky rises, Ferris wheels, boardwalks. And I guess what it comes down to for me, these places are becoming more and more rare, which means you really have to deeply consider something like this, because it could change it forever for the worse. And then when you think about all the generations that sacrificed and protected it to keep it the way it is now, do we really want to be in the cohort of the generation that dropped the ball so our kids and grandkids and great grandkids cannot go there and read that little book as a girl, little girl, and fall in love with horses and have all these great, and then actually physically go there and see them and be like, holy shit, this is worth protecting. God, yeah. Here we go again. Another warning label on my, I can't help myself. I swear to goodness. I just get real upset about this stuff. And if God didn't make me this way, I'm not blaming it on you or anything. God, sorry, man. Put the sticker on the episode. I'm sorry.
I mean, there is a reason they send us all offshore.
Yeah. So look, man, I don't want to be half of what I do now. I tell this to my team. I don't want to be the one who dropped the ball on this and it changed everything for the worse. And this is something I know about this stuff, is when they put their hooks into it, it's like a greenhead fly. Like, you can smack those son of bitches with your full hand and leave three welts on your hand. They'll fly away and come back and bite your ass again. You got to pound them into mush, every single one of them. So it's like, this may just be the beginning, but if they get their hooks in this, it could be a bigger problem than any of us want it to be. And I don't know how you come back from this.
I think we lost
the ocean has amazing powers of healing, but it's not gonna, but it's not instant, right? It's like that clam bank you're talking about. Like, it probably will come back eventually, but it could be 50 years, could be 100 years, and it won't be in our lifetimes. You know, that if these special places get harmed, it's not going to be the same in our lifetimes, or maybe even our children's lifetimes. And I feel the same way. Like, I want my kids to see the ocean that I've seen, and that abundance. And it's our responsibility to try to keep that for future generations, as others kept it for us. So that's why we think this is a really bad idea.
So it is on the Federal Register, which is federalregister.gov. The RFI is for commercial leasing for outer continental shelf minerals offshore the Commonwealth of Virginia. It's docket number BOEM 2026-0100. And there is a nice big green button right at the top that says submit a public comment. It allows you to upload files if you have like a longer thing you want to upload, but you can just write in the comment field just like you would on any other blog. And, I think you have the option of, you can submit as an individual. You can say exactly what you want and what you feel. I think you have the option of being anonymous, so you don't have to give the federal government your name if you don't want to. And, the most important thing to do is, tell the people whose job it is to decide what to do with this chunk of the ocean, what this chunk of the ocean means to you and to your family and to, your life. So that people can see how important it is, and get an idea for just how much opposition, or if there's not opposition. I suspect, knowing how these things go, there will be mostly opposition. But I think everyone who's got an opinion on this should submit a comment, regardless of if you're for or against it.
Well, I can't listen, y'all. It's weird, like the world that we live in, where it seems like there's a whole bunch of, really passionate people who work on things. Each one of us works on something a little bit different, and they don't cross over sometimes, and sometimes they do. But, our dream with starting the Guides Association was to have the most educated group of anglers on God's green earth. And we would stick up for our friends in Louisiana for redfish, and our friends in Louisiana, my members in Louisiana, would stick up for us for striped bass, and we'd all help the guys in Georgia for redfish or speckled trout or whatever, and just kind of have this like army of people, you know, where we all stand for the same thing and we all stick together when our backs are against the wall. And like, this may be my home, but I'd really appreciate it. I'd really, really appreciate it from my listeners if they just took 30 seconds and followed Andrew's instructions and just ripped off something, because this is my home. And this is where I care about. And you know, I believe me, I stick up for all y'all across the country and all the stuff that matters to you. And y'all hear me all the time for 200 episodes talk about what a special place I live in and how it's just, you know, it's just there ain't another place like it. And just imagine if you woke up one morning a month ago and you picked up, you know, you picked up your phone and started scrolling through your news alerts for the morning and you saw deep sea mining, Eastern Shore of Virginia, big as Delaware, 100 million acres, over 2,000 square miles. And we're going to wreck the first 6 feet of the bottom and we don't even know why we're doing it, but let us start with the process. And you know, you would have dropped your phone and clutched your pearls and gasped just like I did. So this is important. And I want to thank Miriam and Andrew for sharing their expertise, because it's just funny to me how things just happen. And y'all have now shared your expertise with my audience, and you have an open invite to come back, because we ain't going to stop it dead at this RFI. Like, we're going to have to go through a couple other iterations. I think we're all veterans enough to know that, like, this is going to be a protracted thing that we're, and this is just the first step. So y'all have an open invite as this progresses to come on this podcast and use it as, you know, one of your mini megaphones. And the more that you do that, the more that our community is going to respond to it. Because if it's phosphate mines in Florida that are wrecking my guide's water and habitat on the west coast of Florida in the Keys, like, you know, it's cruise ships that want permits to dock and kick up those plumes for God knows how long, or if it's, you know, whatever half-ass idea the governor of Louisiana has next week that's going to make me have a stroke, you know, like, we all have to stick together on this stuff. Y'all did a great job. You should be proud of yourselves explaining this incredibly complicated, crummy issue to a bunch of fishermen. And, you know, I said it before and I'll say it again, one email, y'all are welcome on here. I'm sure my audience love this podcast. Y'all come back anytime, and we'll be this, you know, we'll be with y'all from this point until hopefully we can kill this thing with fire. So it's just dumb. So at least I know I'm not the only one who wakes up in the morning and is like, I wonder what other dumb stuff somebody's going to try today that I have to beat back with a pool noodle. You know what I mean? Like, that's,
you live in a time of bounty of dumb stuff.
Dude, it's just like, Miriam, I'm telling you, like, I just, there's a GIF that we use. We found it. I don't even know who the hell loaded it, like, on your phone, you know, in our group text. And it's the Minions. If you just search for Minion pool noodle, it'll come up. And there's a little Minion, and he's hitting a big Minion with the pool noodle, and he won't stop. And the big Minion just loses it and just beats the snot out of the little Minion with a bigger pool noodle. And that's our code for, we just rip somebody apart on social media. Guys, so much. I hope you had fun. Hang out 1 second after I close this out. So everyone, thanks for listening to the latest episode of The Guidepost, and we will see you on here, and please send your comments in. We're going to turn this one around fast.